A look back at how the horrors of Gaza came to be, and from Gaza to Missouri, living in a world of militarism and militarized police. Coming up next. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for August 14th, 2014, here on WPFW 89.3, your station for jazz and justice. On the Ground lifts up voices of activists and activism here in the nation's capital, with special emphasis on sustainable living, the environment, labor, and always the left edge of culture and media. I'm your host, Esther Averam. Today, we'll rewind and look at how the horrors of Gaza came to be, and we'll go from Gaza to Missouri to talk about militarism and police power. But first, our headlines. This first from CommonDreams.org. Like much of the rest of America, Ferguson, Missouri has become a battlefield with almost entirely white armed to the teeth police force waging war on predominantly black residents, enraged after Mike Brown died in the street, quote, like an animal, end quote, for no apparent reason. While the police have declared a no-fly zone to provide a safe environment for law enforcement activities, that's also in quotes, police have shot two more people, declined to hear the chilling firsthand account of the friend with Brown at the time, and shot rubber bullets and tear gas at crowds of hands-up protesters, sometimes standing in their own backyards. Police have issued their first gooey statement about how they mourn the loss of Michael Brown's life that occurred last Saturday, but they would sure appreciate it if black folks would protest only during daylight hours and in a respectful manner, seeing as how respectful they've been. That means the police. Besides, don't these people know that freedom ends at sunset? Also, as Gazans begin to return to their shattered lives and neighborhoods, the UN has announced a panel to investigate war crimes there, at least those beyond the obvious. 1,800 Palestinians killed, 86% of them civilians, including more than 400 children, and 485,000 displaced. Still more stories emerged. Amnesty International, for example, has released testimony from health workers showing the Israeli army repeatedly attacked ambulances, hospitals, medics, doctors, and others seeking to help the wounded and collect the dead. In light of that and so much else, in a searing speech at an Austin protest, Dr. Rania Masri cited President Obama calling the capture of an invading Israeli soldier by the Palestinian resistance our barbaric action, and schools him in what is and is not barbaric. She said, barbaric is to deny our identity and to deny our existence. In the name of the Palestinians, who are the most resilient people I've ever known, we pledge to them that when the bombs stop, and they will stop, we will remember our anger today, we will remember our tears today, and we will not be broken. Meanwhile, Israel continues to carry on raids and attacks in the occupied West Bank. On Sunday, hundreds gathered for the funeral of an 11-year-old Palestinian boy shot dead by Israeli forces near Hebron. The Israeli military says it opened fire in response to rock-throwing protesters. The family says the boy was a bystander. Also, Venezuela has sent a military plane carrying 12 tons of humanitarian aid intended for the Gaza Strip. Venezuela is one of several Latin American countries that have harshly criticized the Israeli assault on Gaza. Here in the DMV, gatherings and protests today will be focusing on Gaza to Missouri. Hundreds are expected to gather at 7 tonight as part of a national moment of silence for those who have been victims of police brutality throughout the U.S. The public is encouraged to bring posters and signs with the names and pictures of victims so that we can remember them and burn them into the conscience of America and the world. The protest and moment of silence will be held at Malcolm X Park, 16th and Euclid Streets in Northwest D.C. beginning at 7 p.m. And before that, at 2 p.m., Samir Abdelnour will explore the topic of Israel and the apartheid analogy, a present novel framework through which to better understand and challenge the complex nature of Israeli apartheid. That will be at the Palestine Center, 2425 Virginia Avenue in Northwest today from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. In world news, the World Health Organization has declared a record outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus as an international public health emergency. Liberia and Sierra Leone have deployed soldiers to blockade hard-hit areas, and Liberia's foreign minister told Thomson Reuters Foundation that the healthcare system is collapsing. The tiny West African country of Benin has reported two possible Ebola cases, but nearly all infections have been in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, with several in Nigeria. In other world environmental news, in September, when world leaders are coming to New York City for a UN summit on the climate crisis, thousands are mobilizing for the People's Climate March, which can be reached online at peoplesclimatemarch.org. The coalition of dozens of organizations says this about their event. The People's Climate March this September 21st will demand bold political action to address the climate crisis. The Climate March is literally that. The people coming together to show that we demand a future that is within our reach, a future with an economy that works for the people and the planet, a world safe from the ravages of climate change. This is a moment about us, the people who are standing up in our communities to organize, build power, and to shift power to a just, safe, and peaceful world. Again, you can learn more about the People's Climate March on September 21st in New York City at peoplesclimate.org. And finally, a Maryland court ruling will likely delay permitting for the controversial Cove Point LNG export facility. On Monday, a Calvert County Circuit Court ruled against local zoning exemptions for the proposed Cove Point liquefied natural gas LNG export facility. Mike Tidwell, director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, said in response to the ruling that, quote, for months, the Chesapeake Climate Action Network and our partners have been warning that the corporate leaders and elected officials were cutting dangerous corners in the permitting process for the proposed fracked gas export facility at Cove Point in Southern Maryland. At a minimum, this ruling will likely cause the real delay in the ability of Dominion Power to begin major construction of this controversial $3.8 billion fossil fuel project, he said. And those are our headlines. When we come back, a historical perspective on the beginnings of today's horrors in Gaza and the West Bank. We'll be right back.
See what key I want to do to them. Everybody knows that they're guilty. Everybody knows that they've lied. Everybody knows that they're guilty. Resting on their conscience, eating their inside. It's freedom. Said it's freedom time now. It's freedom, said it's freedom time now. Time to get free, forgive yourselves of now. It's freedom, said it's freedom time. Yo, there's a war in the mind over territory for the dominion. Who will dominate the opinion, schisms and isms, keeping us in forms of religion, conforming our vision to the world church's decision, trapped in a section. Submitted to committee election, moral infection, epidemic lies and deception, insurrection of the highest possible order, distort, and I take recorders from hearing like underwater, beyond the borders, find ascending disorder, bound by the strategy of systemic depravity, heavy as gravity, head first in the cavity, without a bottom, a fate worse than Sodom, what's got them, drunk off the spirits, truth comes, we can't hear it when you've been programmed to fear it. I had a vision, I was falling in indecision, appalling, calling religious a program on television, how can dominant wisdom be recognized in a system of antichrist and majority rules, intelligent fools, PhDs in illusion, masters of mass confusion, bachelors of past delusion. Now who you choosing, the head of the tail, the bloodshed of the male, or confidence in the veil? Conferences at Yale, discussing doctrines of Baal, causing people to fail, keeping the third in jail. His word is nailed, everything to the tree, severing all of me from all that I used to be. Formless and void, totally paranoid, enjoying darkness as Lord, keeping me from the sword. Blocked from mercy,
bitter than Circe. Hungry and thirsty for good meat, we would eat and still dine at the table of deceit. How incomplete, from confrontation to retreat, we belong to true enemies' defeat.
That's Lauryn Hill with War in the Mind on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Averam. Well, as Israel continues to carry out raids and attacks in the occupied West Bank, on Sunday, hundreds gathered for the funeral of an 11-year-old Palestinian boy shot dead by Israeli forces near Hebron. The Israeli military says it opened fire in response to rock-throwing protesters, and the family says the boy was a bystander. This continuing violence is certainly one reason to look back on how Israel and Palestine started. This is a good audio, actually produced as part of a video for Jewish Voice for Peace. Let's listen.
What would happen if you build a refuge for a persecuted people in a place where another people already lived? In the next few minutes, you'll learn why this moral quandary is at the root of the struggle between Israelis and Palestinians, and what you can do to help achieve a just peace for everyone in the region. First, there are a couple of things it's helpful to understand. One, many Jews fled harsh persecution in anti-Semitic Europe, especially the Nazi Holocaust. Zionists encouraged massive emigration to historic Palestine, at that time a British colony, where Jews had an age-old connection and where small Jewish communities had long existed among larger groups of indigenous peoples. But when the UN offered the Jewish immigrants the majority of the land for a new state called Israel, for the indigenous Palestinians who lived there, it was a massive destruction of life. They rejected the UN's partition plan, and several Arab states invaded the new state of Israel. Israeli forces essentially erased over 400 Palestinian villages and towns. By the end of the fighting, Israel controlled 78% of historic Palestine. And when 750,000 Palestinians who fled or were expelled during fighting tried to return to their homes where the new state now stood, they were permanently barred by the Israeli government. While over 100,000 of their relatives and neighbors who hadn't left became second-class citizens of the new state, along with the new Jewish majority. Today, Palestinian refugees and their descendants number in the millions. Most are in the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and Jordan. Many are spread throughout the world, with millions still living in refugee camps, seeking to return to their homeland. To sum up, one group of refugees found a much-needed home. But in the process, a new group of refugees was created. Here's the second thing to understand. Israel was founded as a Jewish state. But now ask yourself, what exactly does that mean? People had lots of ideas about what a Jewish state should look like. Some called for equality for all citizens. But what was created, in practice, was institutional discrimination against non-Jews. In other words, Israel ended up being built on a blueprint of exclusion. The Israeli government wants maximum land and resources for Jews, but not the Palestinians living there. That's why, inside Israel, Jews get special privileges, including rights to land and housing, that are denied to the Palestinian citizens, who make up 20% of Israel's population. That's also part of why Israel has never defined its borders. In fact, they still hold on to land, the West Bank and Gaza, that they conquered in the war in 1967. Since then, Israel has built Jewish settlements throughout the occupied West Bank, building Jewish-only cities and supplying them with infrastructure like roads and army camps, schools, and even a college. Military occupations are meant to be temporary. But after 40-plus years, this one looks permanent and entirely unjust. In the West Bank, Israeli Jewish settlers and Palestinians live on the same land, but must live under two completely separate and unequal systems of Israeli law. The Jewish settlers dominate the natural resources, including water and agricultural land, and they're backed by the Israeli army. To maintain the occupation, Israel has demolished thousands of Palestinian homes and orchards, confiscated Palestinian land, bombed a captive civilian population in Gaza, and punished resistance with raids, arrests, and assassinations, all to gain maximum land while making life so difficult for Palestinians that they will either leave or be too afraid to resist. Palestinians have fought back. For decades, they tried to achieve national liberation through armed struggle. Some groups still do. But the majority now support popular protest instead. The deeply harmful pattern of control, repression, and violence profoundly harms Palestinians living under occupation and Israelis living as occupiers. This must be broken to reach a peaceful and secure future for both peoples. Now that you understand the problem, what about the solution? What about peace talks? So far, over two decades of U.S.-backed peace talks have actually made things worse by helping Israel continue the occupation. It's been years of talking while Israel massively expanded the Jewish settlements and literally redrew the map. Peace talks are good if they're real, but not when they're theater to cover a land grab. So now what? The current world superpower, the United States, has been a terrible friend, enabling Israel's destructive and self-destructive expansion onto Palestinian land by funding the Israeli military, the biggest recipient of U.S. foreign aid in the world. But there's another superpower that can make the difference. You. There's a movement with hundreds of thousands of people just like you across the world, including Palestinians and Israelis, protesting, educating, divesting, and boycotting, all to bring nonviolent international pressure on Israel to stop violating human rights of Palestinians. Throughout history, where governments have failed to push for justice, people just like you, like us, have taken the lead and won. Now it's the Palestinians' turn for freedom and justice. We can pressure Israel to end the occupation and the discrimination. We want all people, Jews and Palestinians, to have equality, human rights, and democracy. We can change history. Join us.
That was Israel and Palestine, a very short introduction produced by Jewish Voice for Peace. One of the solutions mentioned at the end of that audio and video is the boycott, sanctions, divestment movement. And as we reported last month, the website for the Sacramento, California chapter of the BDS movement really has the most comprehensive list of the top 10 brands from Israel to boycott, including some that might be your favorites, like the cosmetics company Estee Lauder and its brands, including Clinique, MAC, Origins, Bumble, and Aveda. And other companies to boycott that are just kind of more general products, not like kind of Caterpillar, because not many of us buy a tractor. But some of the other products are like Sara Lee, Victoria's Secret, Intel, and a generic drug maker that's Teva or Teva. And you can get more information from the website of the Sacramento Boycott Divestment Sanctions Group at sacbds.org. That's sacbds.org. When we come back, a discussion about Gaza, from Gaza to Missouri, you know, and it'll be your turn at the bottom of the hour to call in at 202-588-0893. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I had a friend who, when you call him up, he'd say, "Prêt pour la révolution." I mean, ready for the revolution. He got that from Secretariat. So I wanted to know what he meant by ready for the revolution. His brother named Kwame Ture, who was Stokely Carmichael. And this is called Understanding Readiness for Kwame Ture, who was Stokely Carmichael. How do we know who we are? Except in the world, going through it together. How do we know where we are? Except with each other, facing reality like dogs straining on a leash. How do we know who are our friends and who are our enemies? Only by what they do, who they hold on to, who they fight for and support, who they help, who they feed in the storm, whose side they're on. How do we know who can lead? Only by seeing them do it. Only by feeling the realness and hopefulness, their sincerity and courage. Only by touching their love for the actual selves of us, only by their suffering in our name, the jailings, the beatings and torture, only by the way our enemies described them, only by their wisdom and plans, their affirmation, their pronouncements and positions, what they think and move on, what direction they give us to transform our slave conditions. How do we know who are our heroes? Can we tell? Yes, if we are conscious, even when they are still alive. Who is it that will take this brother's place? All of those who understand what his life was, what he wanted, what he did, and who in the end he looked to as comrades in struggle.
And welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition on the mighty WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. Here in the nation's capital, your listener-powered station. I'm Esther Averam, and we are joined in this segment by Youssef Manir, Executive Director of the Palestine Center and the Jerusalem Fund. Welcome, Youssef.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
And also by Zine Elamin, my colleague here on WPFW, a longtime anti-war activist, poet. I actually first met him at through DC Poets Against the War, but he is a longtime activist and actually one of the founders, or the founder, of the Critical Resistance chapter here in DC at its beginnings. So welcome, Zine.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to have a discussion today about the making these links between what, you know, the horrors of Gaza and what we're witnessing on our own streets. It's nowhere comparable in terms of deaths, but we're looking at this kind of increased militarism of this country being used abroad and then here against its own people. So I wanted to get your thoughts, each of you, on that. Maybe you could go first, Youssef.
Sure. Well, I think that, you know, outside just of the context of Gaza, where we absolutely saw a excessive and horrific use of force against the civilian population, and I'm sure, you know, one can draw parallels at that level with what you're seeing, although on, of course, different scales. A more direct sort of comparison might be to what we see in many places in the West Bank, and, you know, Palestinians who are watching some of the scenes that are playing out in the streets of Ferguson, Missouri, are having, flashbacks to many of the scenes that are so commonplace in the West Bank of what is essentially Palestinian children who are treated with excessive force when there is no reason for suspicion, who in many cases are killed, where there is no accountability for the shooters, and then protests are met with, again, excessive force from what is essentially a military apparatus. And I think we're seeing, a very militarized police force in the streets of a civilian town in Missouri. So, for Palestinians, it's very easy to sort of identify with this and see common cause. Of course, you know, there's a difference between military occupation and what we're seeing in Missouri, but nonetheless, some of the common themes are there, and I think many Palestinians are standing in solidarity today with people protesting the police brutality and the murder of Michael Brown.
Now, Zine, I know that you have worked extensively with the issue of police brutality. And how has the activists working around that issue responded to the increased militarization of America's police forces?
I'm not sure what's the reaction right now. The biggest reaction right now is on the ground in Missouri. We have seen these these actions that we've seen images of actions that are happening even in, I'm sorry to say, the sleeping campus of Howard University, which has been sleeping for a long time and it's waking up now. But the main thing, I just wanted to add on to what Yusuf said, because it's really important. There is a difference between occupation and and what's happening in Missouri. But what we see in every urban area, and what I saw when I was working for Critical Resistance, which was building alternatives to incarceration, and in D.C. we focused specifically on police brutality. What we see is the issue of gentrification. And a manifestation, people think of gentrification, some people think of gentrification as this peaceful, nonviolent thing, this urban revitalization.
Right.
But what we see in my neighborhood, like in Columbia Heights, I've seen it in fast forward. What we see is new residents moving in, trying to push out the old residents, literally trying to take over areas of recreation for at-risk youth, like they did with the Boys and Girls Club down the corner from my street. We had to fight for 6 months to take it back from them so they don't turn it into luxury condos. What happens is that the new residents come in, and suddenly they're calling the cops every time there's a person of color, especially the youth, on their corner.
Right.
And you could see the police moving in. You could see the front lines of gentrification is actually violent.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened. There's the similarities between the displacement and the ethnic cleansing that is happening in Palestine, and the ethnic cleansing that's happening in every urban area, because the ethnic cleansing doesn't necessarily have to be violent. It can be an economical it can only be strictly have economical aspects and have no physical violent aspect, if you look at the definition of ethnic cleansing. But it does take on. I've seen it. I filmed a guy being beaten up from a third floor of my place at the housing cooperative here at LHO. I filmed a guy being beaten up, a father of three, by the police, and then I provided to the court. And it was fortunate because they had accused him of assaulting the police until that evidence came through.
You know, that is the theme of the moment, you know, with the Eric Garner case, that video is making all the difference. And both in New York and in Missouri now, you see there are attempts by the police to curtail any type of videotaping, iPhones. You know, they arrested a Washington Post reporter there yesterday who turned his camera phone toward the police to tape him. And,
right.
And then also there's this supposed no-fly zone. And, you know, it's like all these words and phrases of war, a no-fly zone, so that, and it's basically so that the news cameras can't capture what is happening on the ground from the air. So,
right.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the other links between kind of war and what's happening in Missouri, in the sense that, you know, there was a recent report that said that the U.S. hasn't really prosecuted a lot of the soldiers from the Iraq War, perhaps from the Afghanistan War, for war crimes. And we know that a lot of the veterans, a lot of people are coming back from the what they call the theater of war, back to police forces and into prisons. So to me, it's almost like, you know, these war crimes are being perpetuated here at home now.
Yeah. In fact, the Color Lines did a story today. They just released a story today about how there's like a surge of military armament that's coming into urban areas that the police are using, because of this is equipment that's returning from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that's what these people are donning. This is what the police force is wearing, this is, these are the armored vehicles that they're riding, and that's going to cause, that's going to have an impact here at home.
You know, we're at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to have to take a little break, but I wanted Youssef to talk a little bit about the event you're having. I think it's at 1 o'clock, looking at the links between Israel and apartheid, and that's something that we've talked about on this show. But why don't you give your thoughts and tell us a little bit about the program?
Sure thing. Thanks for the opportunity to do that. We are having an event today with an expert on the question that is going to be discussing the apartheid analogy and how appropriate it is as a framework to understand the policies and the system with which the Israeli state relates to Palestinians. And that is at 1 o'clock today, and it would be great to see anyone come by. It is open to the public, and of course we're going to be live streaming it as well, and that is available at thejerusalemfund.org/live.
Yeah, and I gave the address earlier, but why don't you give it again so folks can hear it?
Yes, thejerusalemfund.org?
No, your actual street
address.
Sure.
It's 2435 Virginia Avenue, Northwest.
Okay, great. Okay, so I want to thank Youssef Monir, Executive Director of the Palestine Center and the Jerusalem Fund, and for joining us. And I think that Zine El Amin is going to be able to stay with us, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, it's your turn. You can call in at 202-588-0893 to comment on our topics today, from Gaza to Missouri. And if you've already called the station this week, refrain from calling. I won't take your call today, and I'll allow someone else a chance, but I will take your call next week. 202-588-0893 will be the number to call. From Gaza to Missouri, you know, the militarization of our police forces and our military adventures and really atrocities around the world. Stay with us.
It really started just hours after Mike Brown was killed, even while his body still laid on the ground. The local newspaper here ran a quick story with a headline that police shooting leads to mob reaction. That offended me, frankly. It was not a mob reaction. It was a justified community reaction, I felt. And knowing how local media sometimes treats these situations, I have a background in journalism, so I grabbed my iPhone and ran down there. When I arrived, by that time, Mike Brown's body had laid on the ground for close to 4 hours. Police had separated citizens and Mike Brown's mom and family members from the site. She was angry and hysterical in the street. No one from the police department came to offer any information to her about the condition of her son, what had happened to her son, would not let her identify her son's body, and it became a standoff. So the tone of what's happened the last few days was set in the hours following the killing. Police formed a barrier, a human barrier of police officers. There was a standoff between the community, and luckily we didn't have any violence that night. People were patient. They were hopeful that the next day at the press conference, which was announced, that there would be some hope of justice being served, that some information would be given to the family. That did not happen. They were very disappointed with what happened at the press conference, this narrative that does not align with any of the eyewitness accounts of what happened. Also that day, the mother of Michael Brown went on local radio and detailed her interactions with the police department since her son was killed. She described being cursed at, being disrespected, not being included, no information being given. And so people from all over the community, the ward I represent in St. Louis City is just a few miles down the road from Ferguson, and the death of this young man has struck a chord because, like I said, the tensions between the young black community and the police is the same whether it's in Ferguson or small municipalities around it or St. Louis City. And so people have come in support of the family and to air their frustrations at the situation. The protesters delivered four demands. The first was the identity of the man who killed Mike Brown. The second was his immediate firing. As you might know, right now he is on paid administrative leave. The third was something very reasonable, which is that the Ferguson Officer Handbook be distributed to all Ferguson citizens so they know what police can and cannot do, the rules by which everybody is playing. I think these are reasonable demands, and the community has come out repeatedly over the last few days and had peaceful demonstrations in front of the police department. Even yesterday, in a peaceful demonstration, the police removed the protesters, even though they were standing lawfully on a public sidewalk. And I think the way that police have handled this with a heavy hand has made the situation worse.
Welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition for the mighty WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, here at 89.3 in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averam, and we're at the point in the show where it's your turn to call in. We're talking today about the issues from Gaza to Missouri, you know, militarism, militarized police. And staying with me on the line, thank you, is Youssef Manir, Executive Director of the Palestine Center and the Jerusalem Fund, and also Zine El Amin, anti-war activist and a longtime, you know, activist around issues of police brutality as well. And I believe we have our first callers on the line. Caller, say your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Andrew. I'm calling from Asheville, Maryland. And the reason I'm calling is because, you know, this situation, in my opinion, seems to be like the Ku Klux Klan has gone from the white sheep in the hood to police uniforms. Now, I don't know how many of you know, but just Monday, a mentally challenged young man in L.A. was shot by a police in the same manner as a young man in Missouri. And it's appalling, and I think these killings by these white police forces in black neighborhoods is just an initiation for the Klan, and we need to wake up and see it for what it really is. Furthermore, I met a young man from Israel who was a dark-skinned, protected person, and he was coming to the United States to work, and he said that over in Israel, they treat the dark-skinned people the same way they treat the black skin in the United States. So it's a worldwide epidemic of the idea of white supremacy.
Okay. Thank you for that call. And, you know, actually, there was a recent case where some police officers, I don't want to misstate the state, but in a southern state, were actually found to have been members of the Klan. And, you know, this came out in a recent report. So, you know, what you're saying is not far-fetched at all. And it's something we have to think about as we continue to have these killing after killing all over the country. 202.
Esther, let's not forgive the people of color, the black mayors and governors that are complicit in this. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that the civil rights movement did not complete its job, but rather was subcontracted to people of color, mm-hmm. because it was more effective than fire hosing people in the street.
Right.
It was a more insidious. It was more of a stealth, a grab for land and for communities. So let's not forget about this. And I say this because also just as we have people here, people of color, subcontracted for the oppression and the ethnic cleansing of other people of color, we have on the ground the Palestinian Authority, you know, basically subcontracted their work in terms of doing the work of Israel in oppressing their own people. There are parallels there, too.
Okay. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. I think we have another caller. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
My name is Star, and I'm calling from Washington, D.C. Good show. I just wanted to comment largely on the audio tape. But I wanted to first say that I can remember in Washington, D.C., going to anti-Klan demonstrations where there was a lot of police violence back in the 80s. And alongside us were large numbers of Palestinian students wearing the traditional white, black, checked scarves, the keffiyeh. It was real solidarity. Anyway, with regard to the audio tape, although it had some accurate information, there were some really factually inaccurate information that I think needs to be corrected. There was quite a bit, actually, but I'll just focus on the first part. The video audio tape said that the UN offered a majority of the land to the refugees, and it made it sound like the Israeli, the Jewish refugees from Europe, and it made it sound like an altruistic act. First of all, it wasn't a majority of the land. It was about 50% of the land under the mandate at that time. And the Israelis captured another 28% of the land during the war in 1967. That's when they had 78% of historic Palestine. And with the incursion of all of these settlements, which are ever expanding, I think that the land left to the Palestinians is now down to somewhere between 2 and 6%, if I'm not mistaken.
I know that in this most recent Gaza attack, that they basically cut the Gaza in half.
The urgency of getting the analysis of the causes right is that you won't get the solutions right if you don't have the causes right. And it's what they're doing is, as you pointed out, I'm glad you pointed that out, clearly Israel is planning to divide up Gaza the way it has the West Bank into these enclaves, where they'll, you know, more and more tighten the noose on, parts of it. And they're clearly planning to drive out anyone who can leave educationally or material or has the wherewithal to get out. And they will annex the rest of the land, and you won't have any Palestinians left who really will have the resources to fight with. Mm-hmm. And that's really impending. But let me just also say that in terms of the foundation of Israel, it wasn't an act of the UN as altruism. I mean, first of all, the UN, although it has representation from a number of third world countries, was founded by the major imperialist powers and had to bring in the Soviet Union for a variety of reasons. But it was really their way of resolving their differences in order to, you know, essentially exploit the world better. But Herzog, who was a leading Zionist, and the film does not define Zionism. The audio tape did not define Zionism. And I think that that's instructive. So Zionism is the belief that Jews have a right to a Jewish state on Palestinian land. Okay. When Herzog in the late 90s, and I'm just going to finish up quickly, appealed to all of the major imperialist powers in Europe, and including ones that were virulently anti-Semitic. And his argument was, if you will give us support for founding a state in Palestine, at first they were also looking at other places, like Uganda, for instance, if you will give us support, we will be, and this is a quote, an outpost of civilization among the savages for you. And there has been complete military complicity between the U.S. and Israel ever since then. So we got to look at it in the imperialist context. Thank you,
Star. Always insightful and always, on point with our discussion. I wanted to ask you, Seth, since he, was so kind to, stay with us, about, it's been something that's really been bothering me, and it's not only with Gaza, but also the repeated cases of police brutality. The same day that the young Palestinian American boy was beaten severely, visiting, Palestine. That was the same week that a African American woman was beaten, in broad daylight on the highway in California by a California highway police officer. And ever since that happened, I've been thinking about how it seems like we're being conditioned to accept this kind of brutalization, and business just goes on as usual. And I just think that it's almost worse to me than the actual brutalization, because it's trying to change our minds to make it seem acceptable that people are brutalized and killed, and people just kind of go on about their business, and they think that it's okay because these people don't matter.
Well, what we see happening both in Palestine and I think here, again on different scales, but nonetheless in some of the same ways, is, as was pointed out earlier, a major lack of accountability. And that lack of accountability, or the extent to which there is accountability, varies based on the victim's ethnicity or race or background. We see this in Palestine all the time, where Israeli police or soldiers will face serious charges if the victim of anything that they do is an Israeli Jew. But if it's a Palestinian, then they are let off without any serious reprimand. And I think we see the same sort of dynamic here. You know, here you have a police officer, in this case in Ferguson, Missouri, who's essentially on paid vacation at this point after having, you know, killed a unarmed 18-year-old for what seems like no reason, no justifiable reason whatsoever. And we see that there is a lack of accountability, a very clear failure in due diligence by the police to even interview people who were on the scene. Numerous witnesses have come forward now and said that, you know, they saw what happened firsthand. The police have not even interviewed them. And I think that this lack of accountability does breed more and more of the same sort of brutality and violence against people of color or people of or minorities in the United States and in Israel-Palestine. And until I think that accountability, that lack of accountability is addressed, you know, this is only going to continue, and it's only going to continue on more horrific scales. You know, there was a time when people would protest the use of police cracking people's heads open with batons. You know, but now we see, you know, police basically in military gear on top of armored personnel carriers pointing sniper rifles at unarmed crowds.
Exactly. I was watching that on cable TV last night, and actually the commentators were mentioning it, that they'd never seen such a thing, that, you know, here you have, you know, it looks like an army regiment or something out there with, you know, shields, and they claim that they had to attack because someone threw something at them. And at least the commentators were wise enough to say, well, you know, you're standing there with these like shields in front of you, helmeted down, you have these boots and you have all this stuff, you have these tanks. So if someone threw something, you know, you're fully protected, and that's no reason to start all the tear gas. And, you know, it looked like a war zone out there.
When police are militarized, the mission morphs from serve and protect to search and destroy. And that is what we're seeing, I think, on the ground now. If you are given tools of destruction and you are given tools of violence, they're going to be used that way. Right. And there's going to be incentives to use them that way. And so I think, you know, I think people should be very concerned about what they're seeing now, because the police are supposed to be civilians, you know, not soldiers. But the scenes that we're seeing now look like they are out of a war zone. But they're not in a war zone. They're in civilian neighborhoods. And that, I think, for anybody that is concerned about freedom or liberty here in the United States, regardless to your political views, that's something that should scare you to the very core.
Right, and I actually saw something in my email inbox this morning saying, you know, why aren't the libertarians concerned about, you know, what's happening in Missouri? You know, why aren't we getting this, you know, bipartisan, you know, critique about this, especially if you're so-called interested in concerned about civil liberties. We have another caller. I think Mike said it's Sandy on the line. Just say where you're calling from.
I'm calling from Maryland.
Okay.
I'm a native Washingtonian. I lived in St. Louis, Missouri for 6 years. Coming from Chocolate City, I experienced my first racism in St. Louis, Missouri. And it was the most, I didn't know how to handle it. The police there are relative. They're all related. They reject football players and people that really couldn't make it in college. It is horrible. The time I lived there, being told about the community would tell you, well, don't get in trouble with the police, and don't do this, and don't do that, because it could get bad. I mean, the mentality is unbelievable. These are not uneducated people. These are the people that... Hello?
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They will send their kids to school, and the kids would come right back home instead of branching out. I've never experienced this before, and I've got Southern roots. It's a throwback. It's the level.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And we have another caller. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
H-A-G-O-S, Hagos, Maryland.
Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I think, you know, when psychoanalyst Jung said, most of human beings are stupid. And I believe that. We are being stupid. Otherwise, there is a system, satanic system, called Judeo-Christian. Judeo-Christian means justice denied by Caucasians. These are Satanists recruited, trained, educated, and what is called America, if you know your history, is Israel. It's called English Israel. Do you know that? English Israel. When George Washington died and being eulogized by Thomas Jefferson said, hear me, the first president of Israel had died. This is in your history book. Mm. And then in 1854, Supreme Court passed a law instructing the so-called U.S. Army to obey Israel,
Okay.
So what is called Palestine now is an outpost of Judeo-Christian called NATO.
Okay. Hello? Okay. Thank you for that call. You know, while he was talking, you know, it reminded me of how, I don't know, disappointed, furious I was when, you know, we went into Iraq to rescue this, you know, rescue folks, and they were talking about how it was a humanitarian mission, there could be a genocide, and then, of course, you know, we're still witnessing a genocide in Palestine, but that was never referred to in that same way by our president. And it just really, really bothered me. It fits into this kind of Orwellian thing where we're told to think, okay, these are precious bodies. These are precious souls. These aren't precious souls. This isn't a genocide. This is a genocide. And I abhor that. It just really bothers me. And I didn't know if you all wanted to speak on that.
I wanted to mention, this is Zane, I wanted to mention one thing that's really important. First of all, yes, there is, you know, at the same time that Obama said this is unacceptable what's happening in Iraq, he had just a few days earlier sent munitions so that to feed the massacre of Palestinians to so that can be sustained.
Right.
And that's disgusting, but there's something structural at the most, you know, in our society that is wrong here in the United States. And the overlap is, we don't have to reach very far to see the overlap of what's happening in urban areas and what's happening in Palestine.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap it up. The time's, you know, really just flown. We've had like a really interesting discussion. You know, that'll do it for me on this Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Avaram. Special thanks to our guests, Youssef Moner, Executive Director of the Palestine Center and the Jerusalem Fund, and Zine El Amin, anti-war activist and fellow WPFW host. Special thanks to our engineer, Mike Nicella, and thank you so much for listening and calling in. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages on The Ground Show. Stay tuned for Askia Muhammad with the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Peace.